Hello, everybody, and good morning. Welcome to Turning Towards Life on this very sunny Sunday in London for Justin and I. We are here for Turning Towards Life, as usual, on our Sunday slot of 9 a.m. UK time. And you are very, very welcome here. Today, we are in an April day in 2021, and we happen to have this afternoon our first live gathering of our Turning Towards Life community. And so we're carrying on as usual doing this, but then this afternoon we're going into an extended version of a 3-hour live event. And I feel really excited about it and really glad to be carrying on doing what we're doing and also having that coming this afternoon. And as usual, we have a source, a lovely piece that Justin's bringing us today by Ellen Bass. And it just feels like we've gathered so many people around the world, Justin, to be in the conversation with us, to the point where we're saying, oh, let's find a way of being in direct live conversation with people. So I think today feels like a bit of a, I don't know, like one of those moments of, oh, this is something kind of realer than I thought or something. So I'm really grateful that for that feeling and grateful to be here and to be entering into the unknown with you one more time.
Mm. Fun entering into the unknown together, Lizzie. And hello, everyone. I think I wanted to say that if you happen to be listening live this morning or catch the podcast version before 2 p.m. UK time on Sunday, the 18th of April, 2021, you're still very welcome to join us this afternoon. And you can find your way to do that on our website, turningtowards.life. So maybe we'll see some extra people there this afternoon. And to all of you who are coming this afternoon, we're looking forward to seeing you. And before we read this source, as we do every week, reading a source which then launches us off into some unknown, who knows what conversation, Lizzie, I want to give a shout out and a thank you to Maya Stein. And we read a poem by Maya some weeks ago, and meeting Maya that way got me involved in one of Maya's writing workshops. And I came across this poem from Maya on one of those workshops. So thanks, Maya, for bringing us this. And I'm just going to dive in and read it. It's called How to Apologize. And it's by Ellen Bass. Cook a large fish, choose one with many bones, a skeleton you will need to expose, maybe the flying silver carp that's invaded the Great Lakes, tumbling others into oblivion. If you don't live near a lake, you'll have to travel. Walking is best and shows you mean it, but you could take a train and let yourself be soothed by the rocking on the rails. It's permitted to receive solace for whatever you did or didn't do. Pitiful, beautiful human. When my mother was in the hospital, my daughter and I had to clear out the home she wouldn't return to. And then she recovered and asked, incredulous, how could you have thrown out all my shoes? So you'll need a boat. You could rent or buy, but for the sake of repairing the world, build your own. Thin strips of western red cedar are perfect, but don't cut a tree. There'll be a demolished barn or downed trunk if you venture further, and someone will have a mill, someone will loan you tools. The perfume of sawdust and the curls that fall from your plane will sweeten the hours. Each night we dream 36 billion dreams. In one night, we could dream back everything lost. So, grill the pale flesh, unharness yourself from your weary stories, and then carry the oily, succulent fish to the one you hurt. You need no defense. This is just another way to know you are alive.
Thanks, Justin. How to apologize. Cook a large fish. choose one with many bones, a skeleton you will need to expose. You will need skill to expose. Maybe the flying silver carp that's invaded the Great Lakes, tumbling the others into oblivion. If you don't live near a lake, you'll have to travel. Walking is best and shows you mean it, but you could take a train and let yourself be soothed by the rocking on the rails. It's permitted to receive solace for whatever you did or didn't do. Pitiful, beautiful human. When my mother was in the hospital, my daughter and I had to clear out the home she wouldn't return to. Then she recovered and asked, incredulous, how could you have thrown out all my shoes? So, you'll need a boat. You could rent or buy, but for the sake of repairing the world, build your own. Thin strips of western red cedar are perfect, but don't cut a tree. There'll be a demolished barn or a downed trunk if you venture further. And someone will have a mill, and someone will loan you tools. The perfume of sawdust and the curls that fall from your plane will sweeten the hours. Each night we dream 36 billion dreams. In one night we could dream back everything lost. So grill the pale fish, unharness yourself from your weary stories, then carry the oily succulent fish to the one you hurt. There is much to fear as a creature caught in time, but this is safe. You need no defense. This is just another way to know you are alive.
What drew me to this poem originally, Lizzie, and it's sounding different hearing you read it and hearing me read it, was actually not its main topic about making repair between us humans, which is a topic I'm getting super interested in, particularly as we've been reading together. It was actually this line near the end. Just lost it. Got it. Unharness yourself from your weary stories. Mm-hmm. It was such a relief to read that, because the way that that impacts me is to get me back in contact with how often I have carried really weary stories around with me. It was about life in particular, but about what it is to be in relationship with other people. And the story that had been is much less familiar for me, but this poem reawakens in me is that sense of I'm always at fault. I'm always doing something wrong. I've always missed the mark or misunderstood someone. And that's a really tiresome, weary story, diminishing story to carry around. And living in the middle of that story, repair with other human beings is so hard. Because, you know, this thing that Ellen Bass says in the middle of this, so many lines here, and I can't always find the one that I'm looking for, where she says, where is it? A pitiful, beautiful human. That me, for such a long time, the owning up to the inevitable dance of rupture in relationships with people and then repairing them was so hard to do because I already felt sure that I was broken and worthless and blameful. And to even begin to come to another person, to come to you, say, Lizzie, and say, look, here's what I did and I'm sorry and can we talk, would feel like the most frightening thing. It would be a reconfirmation of my awfulness. So it's such a relief. The way that this impacts me is such a relief to feel, in Ellen Bass's words, we're all in this together. We're all pitiful, beautiful humans with hardly an understanding of what we're in the middle of, bumping our way through and finding a way back to one another.
Yeah.
Can be a really beautiful act, and that it can be kind for both of us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing in this poem, that the preparation, that the soulful preparation for our re-meeting one another can be a great kindness to the one of us who is seeking to repair the rupture, as well as the one who, for whom the apology is coming, for whom the reconnection is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem so surprising to me now, but there's a me for a lot of my life for whom this is a radical reimagining of what it is, the sense that we might find ourselves met and that we might find ourselves able to meet one another right in the midst of the rupture or the mistake or the misunderstanding is and has been revolutionary.
You know, it's so funny, Justin. So we had a rupture in our bubble last night in our home. And I watched, and I was part of the rupture in some way as well. And I watched us all feel so many different things. I certainly went through a kind of terror, that kind of belief you were talking about, that, well, if I say sorry, it just confirms how horrific I am. So I can't, I have to maintain my position. And I found a way to apologize for my part. And then another person did the most extraordinary apology, but it wasn't really an apology, it was a prayer that was an expression of this, which was a deep kind of evidence for me about how safe it is to do this, and also how unsafe it feels before you've done it. And so there's a threshold that we have to go over that's really in contrast to the stories we hold about ourselves when we apologize. And it's really hard. And I am in such awe and appreciation of the part of us that can kind of breach that gap, because it feels like we have to let go of this story, you know, the line that you're picking out, this weary story is weary, but it's really hanging on to us. You know, it's got its grips into us. So it's really hard to let it go. And yet the benefit, the gift of letting something go and finding an apology and reconnecting is like, I experienced it last night as completely and deeply heavenly. And the tension that came before the heavenliness was huge, because there's so much at stake. You know, like we were talking about a couple of weeks ago around this vulnerability of being so connected, which we inherently are as human beings. We're completely vulnerable to one another and to life. In a way, an apology is a direct experience of that vulnerability. So we have to touch into that really painful vulnerableness of risking this confirmation that we think is going to happen of how horrific we are. And then we come through that and are received, hopefully, by people who are interested in the repair too. And in that reception of the version of ourselves that's coming home to something that's the you need no defense part of us, it's like we get to be in that vulnerable connection again, but without feeling like we're kind of dangling off a cliff by our fingers. And suddenly solid ground appears again. And this invitation to this being another way that we know we're alive is, it feels literally like the truth right now. You know, the aliveness that emerged through the repair last night here was extraordinary. And it feels so frightening before that happens. And we have to make some choices, and we have to do our inner work in the moment, really well to come through. And yet it's so worth it. It's so worth the journey that Ellen Bass is talking about around hiring a boat, but no, I need to make one for my own, and that I can't chop a tree down and somebody's going to have to help me and there'll be tools. And I feel like that's the kind of metaphorical explanation for the work that's required to kind of unpick ourselves from our stories so that we can come undefended, we can come pitiful, we can come in all of our human vulnerability and admission of the parts of us that do things that harm each other. We can come with that and we can hold it forth and say, this isn't my intention. I'm sorry. And that wasn't what I wanted to happen from what I said. And I also said that. And to have the kind of undefended ballast of love there, it's so much stronger than the story I had about what I did wrong. It's so much story about the reaction I might have received. It's so much stronger than the intrepid path of finding an apology when I feel like I'm right. And so this poem and the affirmation that it is safe to do this feels really, really important to keep contacting the safety of this, the safety of bringing ourselves in this vulnerable way. And I just so appreciate the way that this beautiful story, this little kind of pathway is laid for us here in these words, and how it transported me through a process in the reading of it and the hearing of it. And it's kind of, you know, I feel like I have to store this poem so that when I need to apologize, I've got something to draw on that gives me faith that I can. And that there's not as much at stake as I think there is in being vulnerable about something I haven't done that's, or I have done or whatever. And funnily enough, you know, you talked about this pitiful line, and the first time when you were reading it, the line that got me was, it's permitted to receive solace for whatever you did or didn't do, pitiful, beautiful human being. It's permitted. It's like you don't have to keep punishing yourself. It's okay to receive solace in the place that you think you've done the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful thing to say, Lizzie. And I was first of all, the idea that this poem might be a reminder to keep close, to bring out in those inevitable times where we've done something that had consequences that were different to what we'd intended, as a path to walk, as a reminder of what's possible.
Mm.
And this part that you were talking about just now, it's permitted to receive solace. I realized that the strategy that I, the sort of the predominant strategy I had for the longest time in my life, that sometimes still comes forward when I'm in this situation, is that comes forward as a way to avoid being in the situation, is to try to live a life where I never cause a rupture.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So to try to be agreeable with everyone, keep on sensing all the time, what do other people think? Can I find a way of making sure that I never am on the side of the one who is going to have to apologize for anything, who breaks anything?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's a lousy strategy because it doesn't work, because as Ellen Bass keeps on pointing out, us to be human is to be deeply, deeply fallible. Like, we can never know everything that we would need to know in order to be someone who could do that. You'd have to sort of have complete knowledge of the workings of everybody else's minds and hearts and amazing flexibility. And even then, if you did that, it wouldn't work, because it would be a constant self-abandonment to live that way. And that's really, gosh, my years of feeling so terrified of this moment that she talks about here. And then I realized, as you were speaking, that in the moments where I couldn't maintain the I'm just going to never be in a position where I'm the cause of some rupture, if it did happen, I had to have twin strategies sometimes, which would go at the same time. One was, try and make myself way bigger than the situation, which is to go, you know what, Lizzie, I didn't do anything wrong. How dare you bring your hurt to me? I'm, you know, like, there's no part of me that made a mistake here.
Yes. Like,
yes. Or the other way, which is, there is no part of me that had good intention. Oh my goodness. I obviously really wanted to hurt you. I have let you down in the worst possible way. There is nothing redeemable about me. And I'd make myself tiny in the face of the other person. And both of those are terrifying places to be.
Yes.
Because they pull at the very fabric of relationship. They pull us apart.
Yeah.
And so your language, Lizzie, that there's always part of us that acted, and there'll also be parts of us that never intended the consequence of the actions that we couldn't have anticipated. Mm. You know, I ignored something in you, or I said something, or I didn't see you, or I didn't keep a promise, or whatever, all the other ways. And there'll be many, many parts of me that long to repair and long to take care and appreciate and trust and value all of that. So this opening up into neither being one thing but another, but there being parts of us that are all of this. This is part of the path home to one another. Mm. So be able to say, yes, there was a part of me that really was not attentive in the way that I wanted to be. There's also other parts of me that deeply care for you. Mm-hmm. Could I please let you know how I think I've gone wrong and what's happening for you in this, and knowing that there will be the parts of you that are hurt or disappointed or upset, and the parts that love, and we're like a family of different parts of ourselves re-knitting ourselves back together again.
Yeah.
And that's why something I'm starting to see about this poem that I hadn't seen until we're talking about is that for me, the be someone who never ever causes a rupture with anyone else, and the be very, very tiny and completely to blame, or the be very, very giant and completely blameless, they're all really reactive places to be.
Yeah.
They like come whoosh, emergency, I have to do something. And Ellen Bass's words really invite me. The way they're impacting me is, oh, I can take my time to be ready to do this well. Mm. Might have to cook a fish with loads of bones in it that I'm going to have to take some time to, you know, pare off the flesh before I serve it. I might have to build a boat with my own hands. Mm. And what's more, probably need help. You know, probably people, if I look around, who can really help me and not help me be the giant, you're just completely right and the other person must be completely wrong person, and not be the tiny, I'm just completely awful person. Mm. But instead, there will very often be people around who can really help us to see our beauty, beautiful, pitiful brokenness, and will help us into the work of coming back to the other person in an act of repair with a boat and a fish. Our willingness to not defend ourselves and to not tell weary, untrue stories about ourselves. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of ritual here, a path that we're being offered that we could walk. It would be so different, certainly for me, from many of the paths I've tried to walk when some kind of re-knitting of relationships been required.
Mm. Gosh, you know, when you were just saying that, all of that, I was finding the part in me that's the, I didn't do anything wrong. And then I also know the part of me probably better, which is I'm a terrible person. And it's all my fault. And how distorted both of those places are. And firstly, what happened for me is realizing that I have to be the kind of person to whom people can apologize, as well as be a person who can apologize. So it really helps to accept people's apologies. But as in, when there's a move towards connection, it's really my responsibility to do whatever I need to do to be open to that. You know, if I've been the one who's been hurt, in inverted commas, what kind of allowance do I have to make when someone comes towards me and says, I'm sorry? You know, it wouldn't be okay if I carried on making them pay or something. But I really have to be open to that apology and open to this being true for every single person that there is in the world. So I really appreciate that. And I was also noticing, for me, there's a connection between the first part of the poem, which is, cook a large fish, choose one with many bones, a skeleton you will need skill to expose. So we begin with exposing this skeleton, which feels like this kind of shedding of so much. So just the skeleton of myself is left in a way. And then the skeleton is the thing that I carry to the one that I hurt. Like I'm appreciating how, and maybe the flesh is the stories, but that I have to take this core of me, this truthfulness about myself that's not fleshed out with stories and obscured by stories, and lay the skeleton at the person to whom I'm trying to reconnect with, lay that at their door rather than all of the stories I have. And it feels really vulnerable and bare and risky and exposed. And my goodness, it really is a kind of peak experience of being our human frailty, of being in this realm of admitting our imperfections and our missed marks and our really not seeing the impact that I'm having and then being told about it. So I'm just appreciating the arc of this as well, that there's inner work to be done in the unpicking of the flesh around the bones. And it's really only appropriate to bring the skeleton to my relationship with another human being and let that flesh have fallen off in the process of coming to them. And it's really vulnerable and really beautiful and really worth it in the end. And it is like a kind of chasm that we have to cross to get through the places that we're talking about of vulnerability and defensiveness and diminishment and withdrawal and all of those things that we all have.
You're speaking about this, Lizzie, is drawing me to the last lines.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much to fear as a creature caught in time. And I think that's me, that fear has been the thing that most often has stopped me from doing exactly what you said, which is tearing the flesh away from the bones and bringing what's central and true and real. But this is safe.
Mm.
You need no defense. This is just another way to know you are alive. Beautiful new words, and I think they're true.
Mm.
You know, every time I've taken just the bones or just the flesh, whichever way you want to read it, it's an offering of truthfulness and care to another person,
yeah.
And have been met by another person who is equally vulnerable and defenseless as we all are. We find out how alive we are. And all of my attempts to avoid this in my life have been ways of deadening myself so I didn't have to feel how terrifying it was to be alive and vulnerable to one another.
Yeah.
But this is where all the repair is. And this is where all the making of relationship really is in the meeting of our inevitable incompleteness, our inevitable not knowing how to navigate the way through the world with one another. And if we did know, we'd have to be God or something. No, that's the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting this image, Justin, of like, if you and I have repaired 1,000 times, we've stitched ourselves together in 1,000 different ways. But if you and I haven't had a chance to repair, we're not doing it ongoingly. There's a different quality that emerges from repetitive repair in a relationship. And I almost want to say to myself, it's okay to mess things up because this is always possible. So be truthful. Go for what's real. Be honest. Say what you need, because you always have this and it's safe, which then kind of undoes my strategy, which I've also had too, of, well, I'm going to just go through the world and not cause any ruptures as best I can. But the cost of that is basically me and connection, actually. So I'm ironically looking for a connection in a way that's not really a connection. It's just keeping me safe. And so I'm really appreciating the quality that I can feel arises through multiple ongoing repairs, and how something that's been repaired so many times is probably softer. It's probably snugglier. It's probably more hardy. It's probably got different directionality in the stitches, so you can pull it all kinds of ways and it could still, I'm thinking of like a quilt that's been repaired 100 times. Really robust, something that's been repaired a lot. And I'm just finishing that thought in my mind of like, this is always here. This is reliable, this is safe. And therefore, how can I live? How can I relate?
Such a beautiful place to end, Lizzie. The metaphor I'm imagining, one way is trying to be little squares of fabric that never touch one another close enough that we ever risk anything, which typically leads to lots of ruptures anyway, but also just keeps us apart, or the project of knitting ourselves together with one another, which always involves repairing what's going to fall apart. So it's what a lovely thought of us knitting ourselves as humans with the ones we care about and the ones we meet, knitting ourselves ever deeper together. What a fantastic conversation. So thank you so much, Lizzie, for this morning. And thank you everyone who's with us. So many of you who are with us live and who listen later. We're really grateful that you're here. And it occurs to me to say, if you are enjoying this conversation and want to share it with other people, please tell people about it. We'd love to keep on including others who would benefit from being with us. And we'll see some of you at 2 o'clock this afternoon, UK time, and many of you next week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye,
everyone.